Welcome to WISO Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Well, it was just a week ago that people in the Miami Valley woke up to the news of a tragedy, a mass shooting that took the lives of 9 people and injured dozens of others. Today's program will look back at the long week since the news of the shooting broke. We'll give voice to the community that has been changed in some perhaps undetermined way and hear how the city of Dayton remains unchanged in the way that people have come together and will continue to do so as it tries to recover from a horrific event. Also in the program, we've got some updates on the gun debate that began soon after the shooting, and we'll start today's program with just some of the voices of the people we heard in the aftermath of the shooting.
Just after 1 a.m., a suspect wearing body armor and a face mask approached Ned Pepper's, a popular bar in the city's downtown district, and began shooting. Police, on a routine patrol, shot and killed the gunman in less than a minute. Daniel Kane.
I remember walking out the door, my exact words for the bouncer who worked there every day, he's short. I said, man, you're having a heck of a party here tonight. And that was our last laugh, and I walked past that line. They still had a heavy line of people trying to get in. And by the time I got to the end of that line, that man started firing at me.
Then we heard, like, very clear, rapid gunfire. It sounded like about 40 shots with about a little pause in between, and it sounded like...
You know, once the bullet stopped, we tried to figure out what was going on, but obviously there was something there. It's just shocking. It tells me that...
They were good people. Just normal, regular people. And we hang out at the Oregon because it's the cool place to be. Peaceful, quiet, no problems. Nobody expected nothing like this here. Not in the Oregon. And all these babies and these mothers and kids and fathers and sisters and brothers are hurting because some dumb person came down here and did this.
Me and my wife were sitting here yesterday and we heard about, you know, all the stuff, and then I said, well, I'd be surprised if we don't know someone, and then sure as heck. And then all of a sudden I see all these people coming over and I was like, yeah, what the hell? And then finally we got the news. So she always sat on the porch and she's always friendly and said hi, you know. I mean, I'd wave at her. I know her mom and everything, but I never really talked to her. Took care of her kid real good. That's the worst part of it. As a little boy, about probably 4, he was out riding his bike yesterday. So I don't know if he realizes it, you know, what's really going on.
Lois Oglesby, very, very sweet young lady.
Me and her father, he's my favorite cousin, so I spend a lot of time with him. So... more like I got to be there for him, you know, because I know he'll be there for me. It's hard. It's been rough because, you know, anytime someone loses a child, it's just hard. It affects the whole family, you know, so we're just trying to stay positive.
And our hearts just go out for the city. We just, something just needs to be done. It's a lot of heartache right now.
You know, it's hard. It's a lot of families affected by this.
Last night in Dayton's Oregon District, thousands of people gathered to honor those killed by a gunman early Sunday morning in front of Ned Pepper's bar.
This is a beautiful, beautiful showing. Once again, just showing how strong we are when we are all united upon one mind, working together with one thought and process. If we can just stay in this cadence and just remain together, there's nothing we can't do. It's sad that we have to rebuild like this, but I believe all things are working together for our good.
We just felt that it was very important to be here to not only support the community, but the families of the victims that were lost and those that are recovering. It's going to be a very tough time for the community to recover and heal and move forward.
The amount of love, of course, that's here is just overwhelming. And I will say, gun violence came to Dayton, and Dayton does not take this stuff laying down. We're going to fight this, and Dayton will be the city that changes this problem in the U.S.
just some of the voices and sounds heard on WISO in the past week. Like that last resident we heard from, many people on both sides of the gun debate spoke out this week, several clashing in a protest, counter-protest on Wednesday during President Donald Trump's visit to Miami Valley Hospital. Later in the program, we'll hear more on the gun debate from Ohio Public Radio's Andy Chow. So last Sunday morning, when it became clear that 5th Street in the Oregon District would remain a crime scene all day, one restaurant owner and her staff cooked up all the food they had prepped and more, and invited the neighborhood over to eat and raise money for a hospitalized colleague who was one of the mass shooting victims. Community Voices producer Jason Reynolds filed this report.
Just hours after the mass shooting that killed 9 and injured at least 30, Emily Mendenhall decided to throw a fundraiser. Not some time off in the future, but right then and there. Mendenhall was from a restaurant family with multiple businesses on 5th Street, where the shooting occurred. She runs Lily's Bistro, her brother runs Blind Bob's, and one of the waitresses who works at Blind Bob's, Elena Young, was shot and injured.
We're going to donate all proceeds back to our employee from Blind Bob's, who is in the hospital right now, getting like shrapnel removed from her leg. She's in surgery.
Mendenhall gets choked up talking about what happened.
She was just out trying to have a nice night. Shooter came by. She hit the deck. She got hit. She's in the hospital. We just... I can't. I'm going to cry.
Sorry. No, it's okay.
Hey, it's just like, oh my gosh, all people are trying to do is like decompress and have a fun time. What a thing for someone to be a young woman and then be shot at.
Inside Lily's, there are dozens of people, almost all of them Oregon District business owners, employees, or residents. They're eating comfort food, chicken and waffles, and chocolate treats, and trying to console each other. But outside, the streets are still blocked off by police and fire, and a cleanup crew in white disposable bodysuits is hosing down the sidewalks. To get into the fundraiser, attendees have to be escorted through the crime scene by police. Josh Weston is a waiter at Lily's. He says he grew up in Springfield, in the same neighborhood as Monica Story Brick House, who was killed in the shooting a few hours before.
I seen her at church. I seen her in the community. Very nice lady, very funny. I can just picture her just probably just standing in line waiting to go to Ned's.
Weston says he left 5th Street shortly before the shooting, but he learned about it through a text from Mendenhall. And then the text kept coming in from friends who were in the Oregon District.
Someone sent me a picture and there's just people laying all up and down the sidewalk. So I just deleted the picture because I'm down here too much to constantly be reminded of that image of 5, 6, 7, 8 people just piled up.
Amelia O'Dowd owns a hat store called Brim on 5th, right across the street from the scene of the shooting. But today, she's bussing tables at the benefit.
Because somebody needs to do it, and it's what they would do for me, so it's what I do for them.
O'Dowd says there are images from the shooting that will stick with her. Like when she went to check on her store and saw the crime scene across the street.
The whole sidewalk was covered in those little yellow number placards that they use for crime scenes for bullet casings. And there were just hundreds of them on the ground.
Everyone at the benefit says they're shocked by the number of bullets fired and the number of people killed and injured, especially as the police were nearby and killed the shooter within a minute of him opening fire. Emily Mendenhall, who is hosting the fundraiser, says it makes her livid.
I love shooting guns, right? Like, I actually really love shooting guns. But I don't think there's any way that a person should be able to kill 9 people in 24 seconds. That is 100% not okay with me.
And just as quickly as the fundraiser was set up, it starts to close down. The streets are reopening, and everyone at Lily's wants to walk about 50 feet down 5th Street to the stage being built under the big Oregon sign that welcomes newcomers to the neighborhood. They're headed to the first of many vigils and memorials in the weeks to come. For WYSO News, I'm Jason Reynolds.
Alana Young, the Blind Bob's waitress who was injured in the mass shooting, posted on Facebook that she is at home resting now, though the doctors were not able to get all of the shrapnel out of her leg. For more information on how to donate to charitable causes in the wake of the Oregon District shooting, please visit our website at wyso.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. The vigil that took place on Sunday evening brought thousands of people to the Oregon District, and you heard from some of the people we talked to earlier in the show. Then on Monday, WISO's April Leslie took us back downtown for a look at the scene.
The jumble of shoes abandoned by people fleeing for their lives early Sunday morning has been removed from the parking lot of Ned Pepper's bar. Near the front door, flowers and candles are piling up. Heart-shaped wreaths honoring the victims stand just a few feet away. Fifth Street is typically empty on Mondays because most businesses are closed. But today, reporters from all over the country pace the sidewalks. TV news trucks hum on both sides of the street. Dayton resident Lori Cahill stands in front of the makeshift memorial with tears in her eyes. She says she's still in shock.
And to think something like this could happen on a day like that, it could happen any day. It could happen right now. It's just, it makes you afraid to walk out your own door.
Amelia O'Dowd owns a business down the street from the crime scene. She says she watched the initial investigation unfold.
Like, the whole sidewalk was covered in those little yellow number placards that they use for crime scenes, for bullet casings. And there were just hundreds of them on the ground.
Investigators recovered at least 41 spent shell casings at the crime scene. Police say they're combing through a mountain of evidence, and the investigation will likely be long and tedious. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm April Leslie.
The gunman who killed nine people in the Oregon District a week ago was identified as 24-year-old Connor Betts of Bellbrook. That is also the home of Christine Hodson Ganey, who lives just a few houses from the Betts family. We spoke to her about the community where she lives, the media presence that was camped on her front yard for the better part of 3 days, and the Betts family.
I've grown up here my whole life. It's been a small community as I was young that's getting bigger and bigger as we speak, but still pretty tight-knit, and we know, if not personally, at least of most of the people that are in our neighborhood or went to school with us, went to school with our kids, etc. Feel as safe here as I possibly could. And ironically enough, I still feel like I'm in a safe neighborhood, even despite the fact that there was a tragic event involving one of my closer neighbors.
You mentioned that Bellbrook has grown considerably. Does it still have that small town feel?
It does for me. And my boys graduated in 2012. Their class only had 205 students in it. So they still know almost everyone they went to high school with, just like I did. It is bigger, but it's not yet so much bigger that it's changed that dramatically from when I was growing up.
You know, obviously, communities in Dayton and here in Bellbrook are pulling together. There was a vigil last night in Bellbrook Park. Right. Did you go to that?
You know, I did not. My family did, but I didn't, because with the press being outside of my house and this being in my neighborhood, I've been dealing with this 24/7 for the last 3 days, and I just really felt like I needed a little break from everything.
Can you talk about that media presence and how it's affected the neighborhood?
Yes, I can. And I've been very pleased with the way the media have conducted themselves. You know, sometimes people like to use a lot of labeling. I will say things like, you will hear things like fake news, the press is our enemy kind of talk. And it's been nice to experience it in a personal way that has not been my own personal experience. We've had press here from all over, national. I've personally spoken with a member of the Associated Press, the Wall Street Journal, a couple of people from CNN. They've all been polite and very respectful, and I mean very respectful of people's feelings. There's a barrier in front of my house that it's not very much. It just says road closed. It's easy. It would be very easy to just try to walk past. There's police presence at the family's home, but not down the street. Any of these people that are outside of my house right now could walk down there and get a picture if they wanted to be disrespectful and pushy. No one has even suggested trying that. I have seen nothing like that. In fact, a lot of the press members have expressed to me their feelings of sadness for our community, for our family. They have a job to do. They know people are interested in information. And also they've expressed to me that personally, they are interested in how does this happen? How could we change things? What could be done differently? You know, what's going on here? But we can answer those questions without trying to put a bias on it or tricking people into saying something they didn't mean to say.
When did you first see the press? And then I want to follow that up with, when did you learn that the
Oregon District shooter was actually a Bellbrook. And tell me your thoughts on that and how that affects a community okay. like Bellbrook.
Actually, my husband and I got awoken by a phone call from his sister wanting to know if we were okay and our boys were okay. And we said yes. And she said, well, I guess you don't know what's happening in the world. And we said no. And she said, I guess that's a good thing. My husband and I and my sons frequent the Oregon District. We like to listen to local music. My husband and I were there on Friday, the night before. The boys were out of town. That's all she knew, that there had been an incident in the Oregon, and was wanting to know if everyone was okay. And we sat down a minute, and my husband fixed a cup of coffee, and he saw out the front window, and he said, Chris, why don't you take a look outside? And there was a police car setting up a barricade on our street. So I went outside and asked the policeman if everything was okay and if our neighbors were safe. And he was nice enough to say that, yes, our neighbors were safe and it seems to be all right, but there would be police there for a while.
And this was Sunday morning?
This was, yes, Sunday morning. I think I'm going to say maybe 9:30-ish. And as we're speaking, and then as I go in and tell my husband I don't know what's going on, they're having some kind of investigation down the street, then the media started pulling in and started, you know, as a trickle and became like a dam burst after a while. I started out because I have a family member who's a member of the Dayton police, my niece's husband, and I know what he goes through, so I wanted to show support for the police. And I started out offering the police that were stationed at the end of the driveway drinks. So I began offering drinks in general and sharing some thoughts.
And so maybe through social media and personal conversations with other people, friends and family from Bellbrook, can you summarize the general feeling that people have at this time?
Well, I'm still in shock. I don't think it's registered. And the people that I've talked with, my sisters and family and friends, just grief. Grief and shock it's hard to even collect your thoughts. How do you feel about this? You know, I really don't know at this time. These people are neighbors of mine, but we were not friends. I know who they are. I just don't know them in a personal way. And none of my circle of friends seems to have known them very personally, but they're still part of our community. They're part of our neighborhood. They've been part of a tragedy. Grief for everyone involved, everyone.
Christine, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
Christine Hudson-Ganey of Bellbrook, she spoke to us at her home. The media parked on her front lawn disappeared quickly once Bellbrook Police Chief Doug Daugherty read a statement from the Betts family on Tuesday night. Here's how that went.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. My name is Chief Doug Daugherty, Chief of the Bellbrook Police Department. So this is a prepared statement from the Betts family. The Betts family is shocked and devastated by the events of Sunday morning in the Oregon District. They offer their most heartfelt prayers and condolences to all the victims, their families, and friends. They thank the first responders from the Dayton Police and Fire Departments for their quick response to minimize casualties and to all who have provided aid and comfort to the victims. They also thank Chief Daugherty and the members of the Bellbrook Police Department for providing a peaceful environment surrounding their home. The Betts family is cooperating with law enforcement in their investigation into this tragedy. They respect the investigative process being conducted by the Dayton Police Department and the FBI and will not comment further on this investigation. The Betts family would like to express their enormous gratitude and love for everyone that has reached out and given their support during this awful time. They ask that everyone respect the family's privacy in order to mourn the loss of their son and daughter and to process the horror of Sunday's events. Thank you.
Again, Bellbrook Police Chief Doug Daugherty. I'm Jerry Kenney. You're listening to WISO Weekend. This week, Governor Mike DeWine unveiled a slate of gun control proposals in the wake of the deadly mass shooting in Dayton. As State House correspondent Andy Chow reports, this represents a dramatic shift in the public attitude of Ohio leaders when it comes to gun policies.
When DeWine came to Dayton Sunday to memorialize the people killed that morning, he got a message from the crowd. The chant eventually drowned out DeWine's remarks. At a press conference yesterday, DeWine said that moment was not lost on him, saying they were angry, and he's angry too.
Some chanted, "Do something." And they were absolutely right.
DeWine went on to roll out 17 different initiatives to reduce gun violence in Ohio. They include a so-called red flag law, which allows a judge to confiscate firearms from someone who poses a threat to themselves or others. His plan would also expand background checks, strengthen penalties on crimes involving guns, and increase access to mental health treatment. DeWine says there's no magic solution to stopping gun violence.
But I can tell you this. If we do these things, it will matter. If we do these things, it will make us safer.
Critics say these measures should have been introduced earlier, and while DeWine says they've been working on it, he admits the Dayton shooting is playing a role.
Look, we're all human. Tragedy focuses you, and it was time to get them out.
Since 2011, Republicans have controlled the Ohio House, Senate, and Governor's Office, with little to no interest in passing strong gun regulations. Former Governor John Kasich did push for some of these measures in his last year in office, but that came after signing many pro-gun bills into law. State Senator Cecil Thomas and other Democrats have spent years introducing bills that reflect what DeWine is now calling for.
The Republicans got to step up. They've got to do some self-evaluation of their values. You know, people are dying. People are suffering from all of this.
Republican Senator Peggy Lehner of the Dayton area says she will no longer be timid in expressing her support for common sense regulation.
To put a gun in the hands of someone who is mentally ill and has ill will towards other people is not protecting our constitutional rights. It's just plain foolish. It's stupid.
Republican lawmakers have emphasized passing pro-gun policies, such as expanding the ability to carry concealed weapons in daycares, college campuses, and parts of airports. And they've been pushing to allow people to carry concealed weapons without permits or training. But when it comes to DeWine's proposed regulations, despite the mounting public pressure, Senate Republican spokesperson John Fortney says legislators need to take their time.
The fact is, results count. You can't have an unconstitutional law or an ineffective law passed because it does nothing then to protect the public. If it's more important to score political points just to pass a law and pat yourself on the back, you're dishonoring the dead.
Chris Doerr, with the group Ohio Gun Owners, is staunchly opposed to DeWine's red flag law, which the governor called a safety protection order.
He can call that pig what he wants to. He can put as much lipstick on it, but a safety protection order is still a red flags order. You're still not convicted of a crime.
While Doerr says DeWine goes too far, there are gun regulation advocates that are pushing for even more, such as a ban on assault-style weapons and high-capacity magazines. DeWine acknowledges the divide in the wake of the mass shootings.
We might have some differences. We should never forget that what holds us together as Americans, as Ohioans, is so much greater than any differences.
DeWine plans to spend time reaching out to Republican leaders in the House and Senate to try and bridge the divide to build support for his proposals. Andy Chow at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
Well, what do you get when you cross a KKK rally, a Memorial Day tornado outbreak, and a mass shooting? Well, it's no joke. You get a city that has been through a lot. It's no surprise that within days of the Oregon District shooting, Dayton officials and health organizations were encouraging anybody struggling with depression or other mental health issues to seek help. Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley and City Commissioner Chris Shaw stepped in front of cameras on Tuesday to address mental health as part of the city's recovery from its most recent tragedy. And we spoke to Marnie Mastin, the program director of Samaritan Behavioral Health Crisis Care in Dayton. Here's what she had to say.
Some of the signs that people might experience are feeling, you know, sad, some symptoms of a little bit of depression, some feelings of detachment, things that are surreal. Is this really real? Did this really happen? For those people that were directly impacted, those symptoms might be more acute, and they might last for a little bit longer. One of the best things to do is to communicate with others, talk with family, friends, to make sure that, you know, not staying at home or withdrawing. That is probably one of the worst things, you know, that anyone can do in these situations. It's really important to maintain a connection with others. Other things that are real important are making sure that maintaining the lifestyle, so no drastic changes, trying to get to bed at the normal times, maintaining good physical health through exercise, meditation, yoga, and maintaining a healthy diet. Sometimes in these circumstances, people might want to, like, maybe, you know, consume a little bit too much alcohol or whatever, and that's not going to be very healing. So, and if the symptoms persist over a period of time, you know, there's help available in the community. Samaritan Behavioral Health Crisis Care, we have a 24-hour crisis phone line, and we're available at 937-224-4646. Anyone can call us at any time. We have therapists available. We also offer crisis services for individuals who might just want to come in and talk with a therapist, as well as Samaritan Behavioral Health offers outpatient counseling as well.
Marnie Mastin, Program Director of Samaritan Behavioral Health Crisis Care in Dayton. We've got more information about health services on our website at wyso.org. Check them out. I'm Jerry Kenny. That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. We're going to leave you this morning with a little bit of music from songwriter Joel David Weir, who performed live on Kaleidoscope this week. He's from Indiana, but travels to Dayton frequently and has family who own businesses in the Oregon District. Here's his performance from Wednesday night right here on WISO.
This one goes out to the good people of Dayton, and love and love to you all. Hold on to each other through all of this, and this is for you. This song's called "The Last War."
Is for the heart, it's for your heart, against the words and doubts of those who tear you down. Your shield is love. Lift your head from your hands, feel your heart beating inside. You're still alive. You are the image of the one who formed you in his hands and gave you breath. And be who you are. You can make some mistakes. You've got what it takes. Got your friends to help you out when you're in need. We can work together. War you will ever have to fight is for the heart, it's for your heart, against the words and doubts of those who tear you down. Your shield is love.